You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, it's so great to have you all here today. Another special, amazing guest we'll be talking to, as usual. I just want to share that, you know, it's so interesting because one of the most common issues that I hear from patients, really common, especially right now, is their anger and frustration with their partners and their family and their friends or whoever may disagree and argue with them, right? About different beliefs. You know, it's a biggie right now, of course, arguing about politics and all that. So how can we take a look at our need to be right? How can we sort of validate our beliefs without having to argue and yell and judge folks and cut them off? You know, I have patients, clients who have literally cut off relationships with their family members that they grew up with, that they loved, supposedly, and they've cut off these relationships because they believed and voted differently. And they argue all the time. And it's like, guys, okay, let's get this right. All right. I'm not saying that it's, you know, you have to ignore things or your feelings or, you know, shut yourself off to the world and all that stuff. But, you know, I'm not just talking about current political disagreements. I'm also talking about, you know, managing the need to fight with partners and family and friends about all sorts of differences. Why do we need to always be right? Is that kind of trying to find out who we are? Maybe it's part of our identity. I am this, so I'm going to tell you you're wrong, whatever that is. Anyway, we're going to find out about the new movement calling for depolarization agents counters the pandemic of being right. It is. It's a pandemic right now. Let's bring him on, my special guest, the one and only James Twyman. Hello, James.
Hi, Dr. Michelle. So great to be on the program. Oh, I love everything you've shared.
Oh, thank you. Well, I love your book. It is amazing. His latest book is... Now, we've got to put like a tone to this when we say it. So can you do it first and then I'll do mine?
Sure. Version. Well, so here's the book. It's called I Don't Know, Maybe I Love You. Now, you have to get the commas in the right place because it could be I don't know, maybe I love you. No, it's maybe I love you. And we'll talk about where the title came from in a minute because it's an interesting story.
Yeah. I love that. Well, I phrased it and I said, I don't know. Maybe I love you. I don't know. Whatever. That was my thing. You're reconsidering, right?
That's right. I mean, I loved everything you shared. And it is a pandemic. The pandemic of being right. That's the real pandemic. And yes, it got some steam and speed during the COVID pandemic. But this is a pandemic that doesn't go away on its own. I think we need to address the issues beneath this pandemic so that we can see that being right is not always possible and it's not always necessary. Coming together and honoring one another, no matter what our beliefs are, I think are much, much more important, much healthier, and much better for ourselves and the whole world.
Beautifully said, James. You know what? Let me tell folks a little bit more about you. They probably already know you because you're so out there and you've done so many things. But just to give them a heads up about who and what you have done. For over three decades, James Twyman has been a global force for peace, leading millions of people in synchronized peace meditations across the world. He's a New York Times best-selling author of only 24 books. James, what? Anyway, how do you find time for all this?
I get bored quickly.
You're funny. Well, that's intelligence right there. Who hasn't read the Moses Code? Okay. And recorded 22 music albums, selling over 350,000 copies. Beyond his work as an author and musician, James is a filmmaker. He, having directed or produced 7 feature films. You're also a Franciscan Episcopal preach. I want to find out a little bit more about that in a bit. He founded Namaste Village. It's an interfaith spiritual community in Mexico, where he's joining us from today. And again, we're talking about his latest book. I don't know, maybe I love you. How to depolarize your family, business, country, and the world. It's really a call to awareness, folks. So get aware and listen to what we have to say about that. James, you were talking briefly about how that title came about. Mm-hmm. Can you share a little bit more about
that? So my younger brother, Kenny, we're very close, but we like to argue.
It's siblings. A sibling thing, right?
That's right. It is. And Kenny tends to be better informed than
right.
I am.
Yeah.
And it was somewhere around the beginning of COVID, and we were arguing about something. I forget what it was. And finally, I just got exasperated, and I said, Kenny, I don't know.
Yep.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I love you. And the first thing he said was, I hate when you say that. How can we keep this argument going when you say that? And I realized, how can you keep an argument going if there's no one pressing against you?
Yes.
So the truth is, I don't know. Neither do you, neither does Kenny or anyone else. We have our opinions.
Right.
We have our beliefs, but there's no way for us to know anything for sure. Like if we look at things politically or socially, yes, there are difficulties on every side, but I don't know for sure what needs to happen to bring us to a place of depolarization or harmony.
Yes.
And if I listen to you, maybe I'll learn something that can help form a deeper opinion. All I know for sure is that if I don't have love and compassion in my heart, none of us are going to get anywhere. So that's where it all came from. I don't know. Maybe I love you. I applied it to my relationship with my brother.
Neat.
And then I didn't really intend to write a book about it. And in fact, I didn't think I was going to write any more books at all.
Yeah.
But then I was, I do a one-man musical on the life of St. Francis of Assisi.
Oh, I love it.
I drove all the way from Portland, Oregon to the East Coast, where I was going to be doing a tour of the East Coast. And I was in the beautiful town of North Conway, New Hampshire.
Hmm.
And my friend Walt and his wife and I went out to dinner. I didn't realize that his wife, Anne, owns a medium-sized publishing company called Summit Publishers.
Hmm.
And we're chatting about books. And I told her, I'm not going to write any more books, but if I did, here's the one. And I told her the story. And I also told her how every time I give a talk on this, people leave and there's something sticky about it. I'll hear people days later say, I don't know, maybe I love you.
Oh, that's funny.
So I told her that story. And she said, if you write that book, I will publish it.
Oh, I love it.
I said, okay. So I started that night. I have a little camper van. I just started writing that night. The next morning, I went to a little cafe in North Conway. And I'm sitting there looking out the window and I see a man. Now, this you have to know, this is right before the presidential election last year.
Oh, okay.
So I see a man holding a big sign that says, Trump, vote Trump or else. Okay, here we go.
Or else what?
And that's exactly. He had a car just covered with Donald Trump stickers. Everyone who passed either gave him a thumbs up or another finger, which I won't show. And I thought this is the perfect way to begin. So I stepped outside and I began talking to this man. Actually, I should say I began listening to this man because I resisted my immediate urge to tell him he's wrong, tell him that whatever it is I believe. Instead, I just walked up and said, hey, tell me more. Why do you feel this? What forms this opinion?
Yeah.
I began practicing what I think is maybe the first and most important element in depolarization, which is curiosity.
Yes.
To be curious. See, typically, if I meet someone who has a different opinion or doesn't believe what I believe, I just shut them out, say, no, you're wrong. I'm right.
Right.
Instead of saying, hey, tell me more. Be right. curious. You see, what that does is it opens the door. Instead yes. of contracting, it yes. expands.
Yes.
And I can then begin to open a conversation. And then guess what happens? There's a much more higher likelihood of that person asking me the same question, which is what happened. He recognized that I was not on the conservative side. I'm more on the liberal side. Uh-huh. And he finally said, okay, why do you believe what you believe? And we had a beautiful conversation,
which
we wouldn't have had. And that was the beginning. Just I began traveling down the East Coast as I did my musical.
Sure.
And then traveling back across to the West Coast. And I just talked to people and listened to people. So the book is more of a road trip as I listen to people talk about their opinions, their feelings. And when asked, I would share my own. But more than anything, it was to keep my heart open, regardless of whether they agreed with me or disagreed. Yes. And this is, I think, how we begin to depolarize not only our families, our friends, but the whole world.
That's beautiful. What a great story. I love that. But we, you know, we all have that ego need to kind of share how we feel and, you know, just.
Well, you said it right. It's the ego need.
Yeah.
And we need to go deeper. See, the ego is our identity.
Yes.
The way we present ourselves in the world. And we like to think that our ego and our identity is strong, is firm. And yet it's not, because it can change like this. And I think the first step is to recognize, as I said before, I don't know.
Yes.
I have my opinion. You have your opinion. Sometimes they match, sometimes they don't.
Sure.
But humility, so simplicity, or rather curiosity, humility is another very important step in depolarization. To not think that I have all the right answers.
Right.
To listen to the people who have different opinions than I do. Now, this becomes much harder when we're deeply invested or when a situation is really charged. Let me give you an example.
Yep.
What's going on with the immigration situation in the United States right now?
Yes.
Very charged. I have very strong feelings about people being pulled and yanked out of their families, their homes, thrown into these deportation encampments, really much worse than what we could probably imagine. I have very strong feelings about that.
Yes.
So how can I, let's say, well, this actually happened to me yesterday with my father. Okay. Our parents, our siblings, these can be the most challenging.
Sure.
And I don't know how it happened. I was talking to my father and I said something about, because I live in Mexico.
Yeah.
I'm an expat here. I said, oh, there are so many people leaving the U.S. right now.
Yeah.
And my dad said, what do you mean? You don't think everything's getting a lot better? Take a deep breath. Resist that urge to jump in. That's the key. Don't just jump in.
Right.
And I said, Dad, tell me how you think things are getting better.
Mm.
And he began to share his opinion. And I resisted the urge to jump in and say, wait a minute. But then he asked me what my opinion was.
Yeah.
And what I said, so as you said before, I am a priest. I am a Franciscan. And so I consider myself to be a follower of the message and teachings of Jesus. So Jesus told us what? To love our enemies, to treat one another with respect, to serve the homeless, to take care of the alien. So for me, following the message of Jesus, the teachings of Jesus, is very contrary to much of what is happening in the United States right now. Yeah. It is very distressing for me. It's very challenging for me when I hear people say, I'm a Christian, but then they do the exact opposite of what Jesus taught.
Sure.
So, but with my own father, who is a very Catholic, you know, man, and I can't just jump in and say that, right?
Yes.
I have to be more skillful. Once again, curious, humble, ask questions, listen.
Yes.
And as it was beautiful because we did have a good conversation. So this is a tricky time, as you know, Michelle,
for us
to be open enough to listen to one another and find creative ways to begin to bridge that gap rather than go further apart. Let's come closer together.
Oh, beautifully said. By the way, in case you just joined us, I'm talking with the one and only James Twyman, author of, I don't know, Maybe I Love You, How to Depolarize Your Family, Business, Country, and the World. Depolarization, that's the biggie. Sure, we all have an identity, I guess, and we really need to prove why we're wrong and all that, you know. And, you know, I've looked into, as a psychologist, you know, the thought processes of why we need to be right all the time, you know. So it's, yeah, there's so many different causes, you know, backstories of folks not being heard, right? Not ever feeling like what they said mattered. So now's a perfect time to blast it out on social media, how you feel or how angry you are, or, you know, kind of poke at folks who you know are going to disagree with you because it feels so good to be right in your opinion, people out there.
Can I interrupt? Because
I wish you would.
I have found that it feels even better not to be wrong, but to open up to the possibility that I don't know everything.
No, of course.
To me, those three words, I don't know, are so powerful. You're completely right that we find solace and energy in thinking I'm right, but it's fake.
Right.
It's not it doesn't have a firm foundation because evidence can come along at any moment showing us that I'm not right. How often does that happen? It happens to me all the time. I think for sure I'm right about something. Next thing I know, I'm proven wrong.
Yep.
Embrace that. Begin with that. That's why the first part of this book is I don't know. And then maybe if I listen to you, I'll learn something.
Yeah.
But if I love you no matter what. Now, we may not be able to say that aloud to every person we interact with, but I can show respect, I can show love, I can show compassion
to
everyone, especially those people who disagree with me, as challenging as that may be.
Boy, is that true. And, you know, there's so many people that are, but I, like you said, it is more of an ego thing. And it, you know, it's just be a little humble. You don't have to prove. You can, like I said, be an observer rather than a total feeler and take it into your heart that you are right. And yes, we all have our own beliefs and our own truths and our own, but that's what the whole idea of opening up your heart and getting rid of depolarization is about. James, I'm just always curious about my guests. Have you always been such a loving soul?
Oh gosh. I hope you're right. I can say that I have always been drawn to spirit. I was raised in a very Catholic family, and I just always had this deep passion and love for the divine, which means that I also have a deep love and compassion for people.
So
the way I was raised, that just meant I was made to be a priest. So at a very early age, I left home at 18 to enter the Franciscan order. I was always a lover of St. Francis of Assisi. So I became a Franciscan at 18, but it didn't take at that time. I was only there for a couple of years. And it was only 5 years ago that I shifted gears, became an Episcopalian. And many people don't know that there are orders, religious orders within the Episcopal Church, just like the Catholic Church. And I found a Franciscan order there in the Episcopal Church.
I don't think they do.
Most don't. And I found one that really resonated with me. So now I'm an Episcopal priest and a member of a Franciscan community. And by the way, I should say, if you don't mind, I'll tell you a story about St. Francis because his time.
Yes, I don't think a lot of people know.
I mean, most people think of St. Francis as the birdbath saint. We see statues of him holding, you know, things of water or in nature. And that is certainly a part of his spirituality, but he was also he was a passionate worker for peace. And the time that he lived in 800 years ago was just as polarized as it is today. One of the things that was going on were the Crusades.
Right.
And Francis one day heard something that had been said by the Sultan Al-Kamil of Syria, who was the leader of the entire Islamic world.
Okay.
He said that he would, at least this is what was reported to have said, it probably wasn't even said by him, but the rumor was that he said that he would give a Byzantine silver coin to any Muslim who brought him the head of a Christian.
Yikes!
Right. So Francis, being the crazy guy that he was, said, that's where I need to go. That's who I need to talk to. So immediately he began the journey to Egypt, where the Crusades were taking place, mm-hmm. along with a brother in the order named Brother Illuminato. Of course, everyone told him, you're going to be killed, you're going to be martyred, you can't do it.
Right.
But he was on fire with this desire to just share his love with the Sultan in order to show him that we're not as far apart as we think.
Right.
So amazingly, at this place called the Fortress of Damietta, which is where the battle was taking place, Francis was able to approach. They thought that he was a Sufi mystic, so they let him in. As soon as they realized he wasn't, he was thrown into prison. They were going to execute him, but his insistence upon seeing the Sultan was so great that the Sultan gave him an audience.
Cool.
Along with many people don't know this, but at that time, with the Sultan was the greatest Sufi leader of that time, mm-hmm. a man named Al-Din al-Farisi. Mm. Now, Sufism is very similar to what the Franciscans are in the Christian tradition.
Yes.
Lovers of peace, mysticism, right?
Yes.
Well, these three men got along famously, literally famously.
Very cool.
We're still talking about it, to the point that they began to share their own faith with each other. Mm. Francis ended up bringing, in a very covert way, I should say, elements of the Islamic faith back into Christianity.
Yes.
And the same thing happened in reverse.
Right.
Well, unfortunately, the war did not end there. The Sultan made an offer of peace. It was refused. And then the next big battle, this is very interesting. This shows the influence of one person deciding that having love and compassion is more important than being right. What happened was the next battle took place near the Nile. The Christian army, the Crusaders, knew that if they could cross the Nile, they would be able to take the rest of Egypt very easily and then to the Holy Land. So there they are, encamped right before the Nile in a low area. And the Sultan did something rather ingenious. He opened up the floodgates of the Nile and let all of the water flood where the Christians were encamped. They couldn't move. They couldn't leave. They couldn't do anything for weeks.
Right.
And they were starving. Disease was setting in. Now, this would have been a very easy task for the Sultan to have then sent in his army to destroy the Christians. But this is what happened instead. Because of the influence, this is what I think. I think that the influence of Francis on the Sultan was so great that instead of sending in his troops to destroy the Crusaders, he sent them in to feed them, to take care of them.
Okay. Yes.
Amazing. Oh,
yes, so it is amazing.
How do you continue a battle when the other side just came in to save your life? So the Christians, when they were finally able to get out, just went home.
Yes.
And at least at that stage of the war ended. This shows you the power of depolarization. And it reminds me of my own experience, because when I was 32, I think it was, I just wanted to be a penniless peace troubadour, traveling around, sharing peace prayers to music like Francis had. And when my first book came out, suddenly here I was getting well known. And I was invited by Saddam Hussein to come to Iraq to share the peace concert at the same time that we were right on the verge of another great conflict between the Iraqi army and the United States and its allies. So this was really a propaganda move on the Iraqi part to bring me in. And of course, I went.
Sure.
I couldn't fly into Baghdad. I had to fly into Amman, Jordan, take a 12-hour taxi drive. In fact, I'll tell you the first thing that happened when I stepped foot on Iraqi soil. I hadn't gotten out of the cab. We finally arrive in Baghdad. The Iraqi government is putting me up in this beautiful hotel called the El Rashid Hotel. And as I step out, there's a beautiful mosaic on the ground at the entrance of the hotel. And in the center, there is the face of a man with a snarl, a very angry look.
Yeah.
And I look closer and I realize that looks a lot like George Bush.
Oh, you are so funny.
It was George Bush Senior. Right. Because he's the one who launched the first war against Iraq.
Right.
And it said at the bottom in English, Bush is a criminal.
Oh, okay.
This was my literal welcome mat to Baghdad. And yet what I found were people like you and me, people who were wanting peace, who I could have beautiful friendships with. And I realized we're not as far apart as we were. Just as the Sultan and Francis realized, they were much closer together than they thought in their desire for peace. I remember after I did the peace concert in their national theater, they had a huge party for me. Everyone was there. And we sat around singing Simon and Garfunkel songs for most of the night.
Oh, that's so cool.
So we're really closer than we think we are. That's the key.
We are. I mean, you know, you studied it. We're all part of the quantum consciousness here. We all share the same photonic energy and all that. I won't go there. But I mean, it's true. And we all have that capability of love, deep love. That's spiritual. That's right there, spiritual. No matter what religion we believe in. What do you say to folks who say to us, who are really adamant about their religious beliefs, talking about this. I have a relative who's very strict in her new belief system, and she's always preaching to me on the phone.
Oh, boy.
And she'll say, well, if you think this or believe this, you're going to hell. And I'm like, what? Okay. Well, Why would I be going to hell? Well, because you believe this, and this is not right, and this is... What do you say to people who say things like that to you, or you have no idea because you're stupid and your life will be destroyed, or whatever that remark
this is? This is a big challenge, isn't it? When someone is so entrenched in their opinion or their worldview that there's no opening, there's no air or love. There's no love in that.
Nope.
Okay. Someone says that, it's like, no, there's no love. There's no compassion.
Yeah.
So the call then is for me to have compassion and love and not even care what they say. I have a good friend who I'd love to tell you about in a moment who always says, pay it no mind. Just pay it no mind.
Oh, I love that.
Just give them the love. So I've been a student of a book called A Course in Miracles for
over
30 years.
I love that. Yeah.
Me too. And so what the Course would say is that everything we do or say is either an act of love or a call for love.
Right.
So if someone comes to me and says something like what you just described, this is a call to love. It's certainly not a call for me to argue my side. Why? We're not going to get anywhere.
Right.
It's not going to help. It's just going to push us further apart.
Right.
But if I recognize that this is just a call for love, I'm going to give them that love. Like I would give a child who has a belief that they're going to grow up later and say, oh, how could I have believed such a thing? I'm hoping that your friend or your relative will one day say, how could I have been so unloving to believe such a thing? But that will only happen if I, me too, but it will only happen if I start first.
Right.
I have to be the one to initiate that. What happens? Right. I'm happy.
Right.
I feel that love. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. They probably don't, because when we're locked in a system like this, where I have to be right, it's like clenched fists.
Yes.
There's no happiness in that.
No.
When we're like this and we're open and we're loving to everyone no matter what. So I mentioned a friend of mine I'd love to tell you about.
Yeah.
One of my very best friends for the last 30, 35 years. Her name is Vicky.
Cool.
And so Vicky lives in New Jersey, and I was on this tour. I had about 4 or 5 days off. So I was going to spend them with Vicky. And Vicky, anyone that you ask who knows Vicky will absolutely say that she is perhaps the most loving, deeply spiritual person they've ever met, without question. And she is an avid Donald Trump supporter.
Okay.
Yeah. So I had to first address my own prejudice, which said anyone who's deeply spiritual and loving would never support Donald Trump. That was my prejudice, my erroneous belief,
Okay.
And I could have, when I arrived at Vicky's house and we're sitting there in her living room and she told me this, I could have been aghast. I could have said, Vicky.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God, Vicky, how could you believe such a thing? But I held back, thank God. And I began to follow these tools of polarization. Mm-hmm. I remained humble, realizing that I don't know everything. Maybe there's something for me to learn here. And I became curious. Tell me more. Help me to understand. And I did say to her, Vicky, this is hard for me to understand. Yeah. Yeah. So please explain. Someone as beautiful as you, what is it about Donald Trump that you like? And she told me. Uh-huh. Now, we talked about it over the next few days. And in the end, neither one of us convinced the other to change our opinion.
Okay.
But we honored one another. Vicky's still one of my very best friends. It was never even a hiccup in our relationship. Anyway, I love that story because it shows that even the people who are closest to us may have a very different opinion than us. And it's not my role to change their opinion. It's my role to love them no matter what. And that's what I did with Vicky. That's what I try to do, even though it's challenging with the people in my own life.
Well,
and I'm sure you're doing the same.
Well, I'm trying. I mean, I can't tell people what to do or how to think or whatever, but I can, you know, your book is wonderful. And it's, by the way, James's latest book. So this would be book 25, right, James?
No, 24.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah, James, that book was included.
You're so cute. All right. It's called I Don't Know, Maybe I Love You, How to Depolarize Your Family, Business, Country, and the World. And that's what it's really all about right now, because there's so much chaos going on, not only, you know, with our political beliefs, but everything in the world is, the energy is very heavy. And there's a lot of things, social media, news and talking amongst each other, you know, things stir up within us. But it's also important, and you also point this out in your marvelous book, it's very upsetting to our physical bodies, our brains, the chemicals we're releasing when we're angry and we're churning and we're ruminating on how terrible these people are and how could they, just like you and Vicky. You didn't go there. You didn't go, God, Vicky, now I don't have a good opinion of you anymore. You know, you went to, I just want to hear her story and why she believes the way she does. So how can we just separate that? How can we just put in the box their beliefs and our boxes over here and not, you know, try to get so upset about that? How can go ahead.
Yeah, it begins with the title of the book. I don't know. We have to begin by recognizing that. Living in the I don't know is a very deep spiritual concept. Because it's true.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yes.
None of us know anything for sure. Let me give you an example. We want everything to be the way we think it is because we think that this is the way that is going to bring about the highest good. When I was talking to my father just yesterday, and my father is like the exact opposite of me. He is a very, very strong conservative Donald Trump supporter. In his mind, things are beginning to finally head in the right direction, right? In my mind, well, I don't think it is, but the truth is, I don't know, because it may be everything going in that direction will finally wake us up to realize.
Yes.
You know, I think it's obvious that the direction we're going is not a loving direction.
Correct.
It's fearful. It's the word agonizing comes into my mind.
Yes.
But maybe that's what it takes for us to come back to center. Maybe that's what it takes to bring us back to love.
Yes.
So I don't know. I can't say that this is the wrong direction, because maybe it will lead us to this depolarized place where we can come closer together and realize, just as Francis and the Sultan did, or just as I realized when I was in Iraq and many, many other countries like it, that we're much more, that we're much closer together than we think and what we want and what we desire.
Beautiful. I love the way you speak. I just hope that this happens and that your book gets out there, and that hopefully, you know, in so many interviews such as ours right now, people can really think about these things. The way to, instead of jump, you know, that instantaneous knee jerk to, yeah, but you're wrong, you know, and I'm wrong, you know, think, pause, breathe.
Take a deep breath. That's the first step.
Several deep breaths. And before you go into the situation where you know it might be like, you know, you have to just sort of, I guess, anticipate it on the other end, but really be mindful. And that's what it's all about, of how you are going to respond.
You know, taking a deep breath and a pause, which is crucial. There's another great story that I would love to share.
Oh, cool.
And it's literally the story of how one man taking a deep breath and pausing saved the world.
Okay.
Literally, we would not be here today if this man had not done this. It would have been over a long time ago. Here's the story. There was a man, he was a Russian soldier assigned to a nuclear missile silo.
Wow.
And his job was, if the order came, he and his partner would launch their weapons without question, without any dialogue. One person would turn the one key and he had to turn the other key. World War III, okay? And this was in the early 80s when this happened. And what happened was the order came. The order for them to launch their weapons came to them. I don't know how, some sort of a readout. And immediately their job, which they had been trained very well to do, was to launch their nuclear weapons toward the United States. The one man, the first man, turned his keys, said, turn yours, let's go. The other, second man said, let's just pause. Let's just take a breath. The first man said, what are you doing? This is not protocol. We have to launch these weapons. And the second man said, just pause for one minute is all we need. Well, in those few seconds, the order came. It was a mistake. It was a glitch.
Wow.
Don't launch your weapons.
Scary.
Literally, if they had done what they were trained to do, they would have launched their weapons. The United States would have launched their weapons.
Right.
Next thing you know, nuclear holocaust in the early 80s. But that one man, and by the way, this story did not until many, many years ago when finally the Soviet Union, when the Soviet Union was no longer together, they released a story. So I think it's amazing. It shows the power of one pause.
Right.
If I sneeze, excuse me, I feel like a sneeze is coming on. But I'll do my best.
That's cool. I love it. It's real.
A sneeze is real, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it feels so good when you can finally sneeze. You know, it's a feel good kind of thing. So, there. I love that story, by the way. Thank you for sharing that. You know, there's so many theories. All right, conspiracy theories out there that those who be the world leaders, whoever they may be, and they have all these, the cabal or the whatever that is, are keeping us polarized because they have more control over us when we're in a
friendship. I don't know. Maybe.
What do you think?
I love you. That's pretty much my answer to everything.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, you're right. There are a lot of conspiracy stories about this. That doesn't mean that it's not true, and it doesn't mean that it is true.
Right.
All I know for sure is that we have to relax, take a few breaths, try and find that common place and love one another with more passion, especially those who are more different, who have different opinions. Because even if all of those things that you just mentioned, all of those conspiracy stories, even if they're true, the answer is not for me to get afraid. The answer is for me to amp up my love.
Yes.
Amp up my desire to communicate and to connect.
Yes.
Because those are the only thing, if they are true, those are the only things that are going to dissolve them.
Yep.
So really the answer is so simple. Turn up the love.
Oh, that's beautiful. And I think I have, you know, read and been a psychologist for a really long time. And my belief is that the root is if we can go within and love that which we are, or like at least who we are, have self-compassion, get rid of those self-defeating thoughts of beating ourselves up, or, you know, we're not worthy, or all that stuff we bought into growing up. And really take a look at just loving ourselves as being here as a conscious person. That's and right. And being grateful. So I think all of these things too will really allow us, if we have compassion and love for ourselves, to give that to others. But there's so many people who are, that's why I'm busy in my work, who are just, you know, rolling around with a lot of that low self-esteem or self-hate and self-criticism. It's very sad, you know. So I love your point about compassion, having compassion for others.
Yeah, so important, isn't it? You know, for the people who are still locked in fear,
sure,
we have to be compassionate, because confronting them isn't going to help. Trying to convince them probably won't help.
No.
But just listening to them and hoping that they listen to us, and maybe we can have a dialogue.
Yes.
And maybe I'll say, hey, I never considered that. Or maybe they'll say that. But the whole idea is that the pandemic of being right has got to dissolve. We need to come closer together if we're going to have a chance.
Yes. Yes, exactly. I agree. Can you give some other practical steps that folks might take? My audience loves practical steps. How can to become depolarizing agents of the world, you know, in our families, our communities, our relationships, whatever it may be. What are
I have a good friend who has a saying, watch your mind like a hawk.
Oh, yeah. I love
this
that.
This is where it always starts. Watch your mind. And when you have a judgment or a disagreement in your mind, you're judging someone because they're different, take a pause, take a breath, and consider the possibility that this person has something to teach me. I don't need to be against this person. This is my teacher. Yeah. And for me to just jump in with my own judgments and say, this person is bad, wrong, whatever it is.
Yeah.
In fact, I'll give you another story from the book that illustrates this.
Yeah.
As I said before, it's a road trip. And as I was beginning to drive, actually not beginning, as I was almost two-thirds of the way back to Oregon in my van, I stopped at a truck stop in Nebraska.
Oh, cool.
Nowhere, just to get some sleep. It was very late at night. I went into the truck stop to buy something. And the only other person that was in there other than the cashier was a huge, burly, dangerous-looking guy. And he's staring right at me. And I thought, what's going on? I wonder why the man is staring. This isn't good. So I ignored him until he walked up and he said, hey, are you James Twyman? The last thing I expected. I said, yeah.
Yeah.
And he said, my wife likes you. She listens to your thing in the morning, and she's read a few of your books, and I recognized you from that. That was the last thing I expected to happen in a truck stop in the middle of nowhere.
Yes.
And he said, hey, can we talk for a few minutes? I said, sure. Right. So we sat down. And this man who I call in the book Stan the Man.
Yeah.
This huge, dangerous looking guy ended up being one of the sweetest men who, just like you and I, was passionate about depolarization and honoring people no matter what their opinion is. And if I had just judged him as dangerous to avoid, I would never have received the gift that I received. So once again, watch your mind like a hawk. When you catch those judgmental ideas, question yourself before you question the other person.
Yes.
Ask yourself the question, is this really true? Or is there another way I can look at this person? Because this person, even if there's someone like what you described as constantly attacking or telling you you're going to hell, there is still goodness within this person. And I can draw that out by loving them where they're at, not attacking them where they're at or trying to convince them that they're wrong, but just loving them where they're at. That sounds counterintuitive, especially when where they're at is definitely wrong. Because
wait a minute, you're not supposed to say that.
No. I know, but you know what I'm saying. Like, if something like if Hitler were in front of me right now, well, he was definitely wrong. I think we can all agree. You know, his position was wrong.
Yes.
But I can still honor the fact that we come from the same source, and maybe. In loving him, I can find the right way to say the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a much simpler. Someone has a different opinion about me politically. Maybe by honoring them where they're at, maybe a space can open. We can have a dialogue that can bring us closer together.
Sure.
So watch your mind like a hawk. And when you find those judgments immediately taking control, take a deep breath and find a way to love even greater.
Ooh, what a well said statement. And I appreciate that so much. And I know that a lot of people are, but I, you know, it's watch those triggers, people. Be careful. Be mindful of your thinking process. And before you go into a situation where, you know, it might get a little dicey, you be the one, like you said, James, you be the one to take, you know, care and listen. That's a biggie. Listen, go, you are's, anything like that. It's, I feel
it's pretty simple, really.
It is pretty simple, but sometimes very difficult to do.
Very difficult.
We're used to
all of
those
us.
Trigger people, you know, who you know, we want to teach them. We're coming from a good place a lot of times.
We want to be right. I mean, that's why the pandemic, the solution to the pandemic to being right has to start with me.
Oh, that's for sure. That's exactly right. The book again, my special guest has written number 24. This is the book.
I don't know. Maybe I love you.
How to depolarize your family, business, country, and the world. Thank you for this contribution. I love it. It's great. And for all that you do.
Thank you. And I'll mention also, this is a movement. We want people to join the movement of depolarization.
Yes.
One of the easiest ways to begin, obviously getting the book is great, but go to our website, which is de-polarize.com. de-polarize.com.
Perfect.
One of the things you can do is there's a 1 or 2 minute long survey that you can take right there that will help us to find more creative ways to help people depolarize. And that will get you on our list so we can start sharing programs and new ideas of how you can be a depolarizing agent.
And that website again, James?
de-polarize.com. Or you can go to my own personal website, which is James F. as in Frederick, Twyman.com.
Beautiful. Well, it's about that time. Guess it's gone quickly, as it always does.
It always does. Yeah.
Thank you,
Michelle. Paul. This has been a pleasure.
Oh, you're lovely. Thank you for all you do. And I love you.
Oh, thank you. I love you too. Keep up the great work.
Thank you so much. All right. Have a beautiful day. Bye-bye now. All righty, everybody. Thanks for joining me today. And I'm going to put it up here on social media where you can listen to the replay or watch it if you just joined us kind of late. So thanks for watching. And as I always say, take care of yourself first. It's okay. Then you'll be great for others. Have a great day. Bye-bye now.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.